Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, Blog Talk family. This is Leslie Gist, and you're listening to the Antique E Show. Tonight we have a cartoonist, an African American cartoonist on the line. Are you there, Dawood?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear. Can
Great.
You introduce yourself to the audience?
My name is Dawood Anyabwile, and I'm an illustrator and producer of the Brotherman comic book series.
Excellent.
My brother Guy should be calling in as well.
Okay, he is on the line. Put him on right now. All right. Hello.
I'm on. Is this Leslie?
It sure is.
All right, Leslie, this is Guy, Dawood's brother.
Excellent. I'm so happy to have the two of you on. Can you tell our audience who you guys are and how you guys started with the black comic book?
Okay, well, go ahead, Dawood, and I'll jump in after you.
Oh, okay. Well, actually, Guy and I were both brothers. I was originally born under the name David Sims, and we were born and raised in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. In 1990, we produced a comic book entitled Brother Man, Dictator, Discipline, which is like the premier black comic book that was credited as being instrumental in starting the black comic book explosion of the 1990s, which led to like a lot of black heroes and black comics in the mainstream media as well as television and film. And we independently produced and distributed our books and did a print run of it of 750,000 books before we ended the series in 1996. And now we're now doing a campaign where we're relaunching the series and getting ready to drop a graphic novel, a Brother Man graphic novel next year, which will probably be close to 200 pages.
Okay. Now, as a young African-American young boys, were you fans of comic books? And how did this start? When what prompted the two of you to say, let's do this ourselves,
Well, I'll jump in and say to start, I don't know if I was a fan, but you know, they were accessible and around, and as a form of entertainment, you know, I availed myself to it. But I would never have called myself a fan because I wasn't one that I was financially committed to any one book or any one particular style. But you know, it was just part of the lay of the land as a young man growing up. I guess it'd be, you know, it's equivalent to young people today. You know, there's lots of videos. You might watch a lot of them, but you might not be a fan of anyone in particular.
So did you collect comic books as a young boy?
No, I didn't collect any comic books. I know my older brother did, and I think Daoud did. I'll let him speak to that.
Yeah, you know, I had my share when I was in elementary school. You know, I collected a lot of Marvel comics when I was young. And it was at an early age when, you know, I recognized a lot of the stereotypes of the black characters in the series that were put out and the lack of black heroes that were actually produced by the company. And what happened was I sat down with my father, who actually opened up my eyes to that fact. And he didn't basically tell me what to do, but I think at that point, you know, when I realized how stereotypical a lot of the black characters were and the lack of characters as well versus the strong archetypes of not only the white characters, but even aliens had more integrity than black characters. You know, they didn't hold any more value to me, and I burned my collection.
Whoa.
When I was in, like, seventh grade. I had about 1,000 books, and you know, I was pretty much done with it at that point. And ever since then, I've kind of been on that route of entrepreneurialism. I was into DJing and hip-hop, and I was a fine arts major all through high school. So, you know, I studied fine arts. And when we eventually did the Brother Man comic book, you know, I still understood the structure of comic books. However, I wasn't trying to be a part of that industry. I mean, it wasn't like I was trying to or not trying to.
Did you just wake up one morning and say, I'm going to start the Brother Man comic book? Now, you said you burnt your collection in the seventh grade. What happened to make you want to set your collection on fire?
Like I said, that went back to me sitting down with my father and him pointing out to me a lot of the images that were in the comics. Now, actually, I had some lectures and things I was doing around the city in Atlanta, and one thing I was pointing out to some of the younger people who may not be aware, I was showing this particular character named Luke Cage, Hero for Hire. And I liked Luke Cage when I was younger because, you know, he's a black character and I thought he was strong and things of that nature. But then I'd never really understood what Hero for Hire meant. And that meant that you had to pay him. You had to pay him to be a hero. And, you know, I didn't get it when I was younger. Then when my father, like, you know, hit me to it, I thought about that. I was like, wow, man, you don't have to pay, you know, you don't have to pay Hulk to fight crime. You know, he just instinctively does it. And he doesn't even have half a brain. So, you know, when I thought about that, I said, you know, why am I spending my lunch money on this? You know, and I just, at that point, it just held no more value to me. But Brother Man didn't come about for years from there. However, I would say things were set in motion back then and eventually came back in the form of Brother Man, which actually began as a promotional item for a custom airbrush shop that my other brother, Jason, and I were running in East Orange, New Jersey for the Black Expo New York, because the Black Expo New York had started in 1989. And we wanted to represent in 1990 at the expo to promote our store, and we thought we'd do something different. So we said, hey, let's do a comic book. So it wasn't really like an epiphany of, hey, let's do a black comic book. We just said, hey, let's do a comic book. But that's the way that we were anyway. We were always creative. We were always creating things coming up. We were doing animated movies. You know, guys always writing stories. I mean, the house is always full of creativity, so...
How many brothers do you have?
There's four of us all together. I'm the youngest of the four.
And you all are talented as far as the arts Are you all employed in the arts?
Not all of us. My oldest brother was employed in the aerospace industry. And then other brother Jason he's in a graphics, commercial art.
And your brother, and I'm a small guy.
I work at a university.
Okay. Wow.
In administration, so no, I don't do a lot of artistic things there.
Okay. So what role do you play, Guy, as far as this comic, the comic book, and Brother Man?
I'm a story development and the writing and the scripting, and so, but it's all a collaborative effort between my brother and I.
Okay, and your father, I know you say he was instrumental. Is he a part of the arts industry?
No, he was he's deceased, but he was a college professor and also a college administrator. But he was instrumental in guiding us as young men with our artistic talent. He didn't write fiction type materials, he didn't draw, but he was able to direct us in understanding the power that you have with the arts and what impact you can have on the community, as well as just with yourself, how you can express things instead of just saying, you know, I'm angry with the way the world is, how you can express it artistically so that other people can understand what you're trying to express.
Well, I'm really impressed with the family legacy. Really am. It's excellent. I'm from New Jersey, and I grew up in Paterson, New Jersey, which is 20 minutes away from East Orange.
Right.
So,
I know about that.
Yeah, our family's all from Jersey City.
Okay, your family's from Jersey City.
Right, so you know all about that.
Yeah, I know Jersey City is like the city that I call the UN. Yeah.
Okay.
You have a lot of different cultures in Jersey City, and it's right across the river from New York City.
That's right.
So you had a store in East Orange.
Right.
And you said that was the reason, the catalyst behind you even creating Brother Man. What was
right.
the store, you know, how? What type of store did you have?
It was a custom airbrush store. Throughout the 80s, I after I graduated high school, I started airbrushing, and I was where, you know, people come in, I'll put characters, you know, you can come in, I can do a caricature of you on a shirt doing whatever, names on shirts, jackets. I also did paintings and portraits, you know, anything artistically related that I can commercially make my money off of. I was doing outside of the store, but the main push was custom airbrush shirts and silkscreen shirts, because that was the main thing that people really wanted. So I was doing that throughout the 80s. I had a shop in North Philly, Chester, PA, and then eventually East Orange, New Jersey. And like I said, Brother Man came about because the Black Expos came around, and that was just
Mom here?
To get a hook to get people to come into the store.
So now, when did you know that Brother Man was a hit? After the Black Expo, what happened at the Black Expo or soon after that told you, wait a minute, we got something here. We need to...
Actually, it happened at the Black Expo, the first day we came out with it.
What happened?
Well, what happened was when we first started working on the book in January 1990, Guy and I sat down with the concept of Brother Man. At the time, the story wasn't, you know, it was just a character that I had in my book. But the story wasn't developed until Guy and I sat down on it. So after Guy scripted it out, it took us 3 months to put it together, get it to press, and then we introduced it at the Black Expo New York in April 1990. The first day we came out, the books were, you know, they were just going like wildfire. And at that point, we said, hey, you know, why are we doing these T-shirts? Let's just do comics full time. Right. So we shut down the airbrush shop, and we just did the shirts full time. I mean, the comic books full time. And by the end of that year, we were at 40,000 books by the end of the first year. We were into probably like 150,000 books by the second year, and I think 500,000 books by the third year.
You want a good
job. And,
awesome.
Yeah,
now,
and
did you self-publish?
Yes, it was. Everything was self-contained. Marketing, promoting, self-published. I mean, yeah, we self-published, and the printer. We had two different printers we dealt with at the time, because at that time back then, it was harder to find people that printed comics. Now with on-demand printing, you know, there's a lot of people that do it, but back then we had to do a lot of research to find out who prints comic books.
Now, are you using on-demand right now?
Actually, I was with the all-new trade paperbacks. What we did, we took all the back issues. There were 11 books, and we put them in a 300-page, three-volume set book that we sell now at the website, which is brothermancomics.com. And we started off with on-demand so we can get the books actually out on the street. I now have a printer in the Atlanta metro area who actually prints, you know, does big print runs for me when I need them. So it's not actually on demand right now. But I may use on demand for other merchandising like the posters and the T-shirts and things of that nature.
Okay, now let's talk about the storyline. You said it took 3 months to develop the storyline. Guy, could you tell us about the storyline and your creative process?
Certainly. When Dawood showed me the picture and we decided we'd like to do a book, you know, of course, now we had to develop everything that went around. I mean, he had the mask character, so we had to develop, you know, the person behind the mask and then the person that, the people that he interacts with on the daily basis. And so that's what probably took the longest time, because now you're really starting from scratch. You're developing personalities, developing the environment. And Dawood might have said it once before, but, you know, I think when we first started, we said, well, it's got to be a little parody on the comic books, you know. Let's have a hero with no superpowers. But, you know, as we continue to develop in that first 2 months, I think it took me about a month to come up with both the story and the scripts. And plus it was a longer process because we didn't have emails and faxes to help move everything along. I think the most we had was, it might have been fax, but most it was just, you know, I sent it to him, and then I think I had this little program on my computer I could send stuff back and forth. But that helped take a little bit more on the long time. Now we can do this, and we can do it a little bit faster, and we could probably do it real time if we really ever needed to do it that way. But as we develop the story of you got Antonio, you got Duke Denham, the public attorney, you got Melody Rich.
Now, who is the most popular character? Now, you've been on tour for the last couple of weeks, I'm sure.
Right.
And I know you have a large fan base selling all those books.
Mm-hmm.
Which character do you hear the most about while you're out giving talks about your book?
I'll say if beyond Antonio, then Melody Rich is number two.
And who is Antonio?
Antonio Valor. That is the gentleman who is the public attorney who, when he has to, he dresses up as Brother Man and gets to business. But Melody Rich is his coworker, and she, you know, they challenge each other, and they're not nasty toward each other. They have a very good working relationship, and she's very, very smart, very astute on the ways of the law. But her heart is not in the same place where Antonio's heart is. He is from Big City, so it means a lot more to him. She's from the county, and she's only working there to work off student loans from law school. And
well,
so she's there fighting crime from a different perspective.
Sounds like you probably – where did you draw these characters from? From real life?
Me as the writer or him as the artist?
You as the writer.
Me, it's all a composite of people that I've met over the years, strong personalities, the committed personalities. I mean, people who are committed, but they're not committed 100%. They have other things they want to do. So when I develop Melody, I just thought about people. You know, I show up to work every day. You know, if there's ever a day that I can get out, I'm getting out, but I'm going to do what I have to do here. You have Duke Dental, who's been there for a long time, and he almost represents the up and down that the city has gone through. And if you think of any major city, there are always these politicians or people that work that have just always been there. They're the names that people always mention. And that's who, to me, that's who he is always represented. And then we have just a cast of ancillary characters that come in and come out as need be. And then, of course, the villains that we create. When I create a villain, I try to base it mostly on a characteristic or an issue and then build the criminal around that versus, you know, just trying to think of some of the thugs back from around the way and then try to – it doesn't work like that. You know,
which villain caused you the most backlash, negative feedback from your audience? Has that ever happened?
No. We haven't had any negative feedback, but I think the one that people have gravitated to the most is the one named The Block. His real name was Edison Pratt, but he went by the moniker Block, which stood for the boundless logic of the original Concrete King. People gravitated to Block and the twins, and the twins worked with Block, Derek and Eric Foster. And see, Derek and Eric Foster, those are some very simple names probably. Check your high school yearbook. You probably got a Derek or Eric Foster in your high school yearbook. But because of who they were and how they looked, I think people could – they related to them. And I think that's what people gravitate to with our villains. They're relatable.
Okay. Excellent. So, Guy, which one comes first? You actually draw the character and then he writes the storyline, or does Guy ever say – you know what, I need another character. Can you create another one to make this story?
I hear what you're saying. Yeah, well, in the process of the book, the story has to come first because that gives Dawood the blueprint to work with. You get the story first, and if we agree on the concept of the story, then comes the script. And they're never 100% of what you have from the first day because things happen and, you know, other ideas help to develop it. And then, of course, if there's other characters that we need, I can either just say to Dawood, hey, you know what? Or I just say, here's a character. I don't have to say, hey, can we add another character? If he's in a situation, he goes into a store, obviously there's going to be someone in the store. Or if he's going to work with a politician, then, you know, he goes into the office, then there's probably an administrative assistant sitting there, and then she leads him to the person he needs.
You'll describe a scene. You'll say.
Right. Yeah, they're all elements. So it's – and that's what also people like because they come across a lot of people that they can identify with.
Now, I noticed on Dawood's Facebook, he had an awful lot of female followers. To me, you know, as far as
he's a good-looking brother, I can give you that.
That's where I was going. Do you think those 500,000 copies has something to do with your appearance and the way you guys articulate yourselves?
Well, most people don't see us. I think most people have gotten the books from friends, and I think it's the works that. That make it popular. I think when people meet us, I think they're pleased that we're personable and you know people like to talk to us and you know we're regular guys. We're not prima donnas. So I think we're willing to share. We're willing to share and help other people do their thing. Our goal is not to shut down anybody or save information. Part of our upbringing is to develop others. Everybody's comic book doesn't have to be Brother Man. Everybody's artwork doesn't have to look like Dawood. Everybody doesn't have to write like me. But what I want to encourage people to do is get out there and do your thing. And if we know how to do one thing, then we can share. I think then we grow as a group. We don't want to be monolithic and you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand. I thought it was a nice thing to see
right.
So many people on Facebook getting his autograph and taking pictures with him. I couldn't find a picture of him by himself.
Right.
So I apologize for your picture
about
with the fans.
That's quite all right.
Okay. Now, as far as the little boys, young boys, when they come out to see you and get an autograph, what are some of the questions that they raise and their parents raise about the book and, you know, compliments that they give you?
Well, I'll say first of all, and then I'll let Dawood jump in. I'm sorry. But first of all, I think a lot of them come and they want to do it too, you know, in their own ways. They want to make their own comic books, but mostly they want to show you what they have. And I think that's pretty powerful for when a little kid comes up and says, can I show you, you know, my character? And I call him the Mole Man. And, you know, and it's not, you know, yeah, Marvel Comics has a character named the Mole Man, and it would actually, I would deflate him to say, you know, Marvel Comics already got the Mole Man. Come up with something else. My thing is, well, let's see it. Let's, what do you want to do with it? It's all good to me because the main thing is to encourage him to develop his own voice and his own way of presenting information. But I think another thing is that young men and young women, they look at the book and they can see themselves. Now, I think I give my children some, you know, positive reinforcement for all they want to do. But when we recently at the art show in Atlanta, Dawood had a big cutout of young Antonio Valla. I mean, he had to be about 5 years old or so. And when my son came into the room and saw the cutout, he said, "Dad, that's me." I mean, he immediately looked at it. And, you know, that's nothing I put into his head. I never said, you know, "That's you." This is the first time he saw it. He said, "Dad, that's me, right?" And I'm like, yeah, that's you. You know, because now he has something here he can identify with. And, you know, he doesn't do that when he's watching Flapjack or SpongeBob or any of those other shows. He doesn't say, "Dad, that's me." So this made me feel really good for him to see something that he identified himself with. And then, of course, if I was a parent, let's say I wasn't Guy Sims, I was just a parent, if I know what the material is, I would feel good that he would have identified himself with that kind of character. Because a lot of times they identify themselves with characters and we have problems with it.
Right. I know where you're going.
Right.
Can you answer the question, Dawood? What, you know, what are some of the comments and compliments that you hear on a regular basis when you have your talks from young?
Oh, yeah. Well, I did I've done like so many lectures and presentations over the years. And, you know, we just had our first premier Brother Man Comics art show in Atlanta in August, and we have another one going on right now that's running for a month in the Castleberry section of Atlanta. And right. I get a lot of direct feedback from all ages. And when I did three library presentations just last week in Atlanta, Fulton County, three different libraries, and the feedback I got from a lot of people was tremendous, but I was thinking of particularly this one boy who was in 11th grade who came up to me afterwards, and he said, "Sir, it's an honor to meet you." He said, "I did not know what this was before I came in. My father just told me to come here because he knows I want to be an artist, and he was familiar with your work." And he said, "When you gave that presentation, I finally saw what Brother Man represented and what this was all about and how, you know, you showed your childhood pictures and your drawings from when you were a little kid. I noticed that this is divine." And this 11th grader expressing that this is divine work. He said, "This is not just a comic book, man. This is changing things." He said, "Yo, what can I do to help you?" He said, "I mean, can I help you carry a box? Can I do this?" He said, "This has to succeed." And I get that a lot because actually the following day I did another event, and this other boy came up to me, and he said it was an honor to meet me, and he didn't know any artists, and he gave me a script. He just handed me a script. He said, "This is a game concept that I had. So just like Guy said, they like to show you what they have." And he said, "Well, what do I do now? Like, how can I make a game?" And I said, "Well, you know, first thing you want to do is, you know, you want to take your script and make it tangible. Meaning you want to be able to show people what this writing looks like. So do you know any artists that can help you turn this writing into pictures and images to help sell your idea?" I said, "So do you know any artists?" He said, "Just you, sir." So, you know, so the kids are out there, and they're really inspired and they're excited. And after I do the presentations, they just want to hang around. It's not like they just want to leave. A lot of times I'm there maybe an hour after my presentation is over just talking to the kids. They want me to sign autographs. They have like 1,000 questions. And it's not just the kids. It's, I mean, there's elders there. I mean, just like you say, the women, like a lot of women have been buying our books over the years. And teenagers, I had a lot of elders there. I'm talking like 60, 70 years old who come to our presentations and purchase our books. And they understand the significance of the book, as well as little tiny kids that come there. And I think the thing is they all see themselves in the book, because when you look in Brother Man, you see all those people in Brother Man, because we don't negate, you know, it's not like Brother Man is not a teen comic. It's not a hip-hop comic. It's not a ghetto comic. It's a comic that takes place in this fictitious city called Big City. And the book is a metaphor. Brother Man is the whole series is a metaphor of the terminology Brother Man, which is the brother of man. So there's a whole story behind it, because the way he got his name was a poem that his father gave him when he was a teenager. When Antonio Valla was a teenager, he was coming of age, and his father handed him a poem called The Brother Man by the Unheeded Messengers, which in Big City, they represent like a fictitious version of the last poets, or, you know, or something like that, you know. So when he read this poem, the poem talked about how there are those people that, you know, they'll turn a blind eye to crime, and or they'll always talk about how nothing's right, but when you ask them to lend a helping hand, they pass out of view. And but the brother of man is the light in the night, and all this is in the poem. So young Antonio Valla, when he looked at the poem, he likes comic books. So he said, wow, this sounds like a superhero. So even though he didn't have superpowers, this kid who's like 17 years old says, hey, I'm sick of crime and I'm tired of it, because of certain events that happened in his life. He realized things aren't going to change until he makes a change within himself. And that's what the whole story is about, making a change within yourself. There's nothing superpowered or radioactively that drives this story. It's about an average kid who finds you're not average when you understand who you are within yourself. So it's basically looking into yourself and finding that power that's within and pulling the hero out of you, instead of looking outside yourself all the time for somebody to solve your problem. And that's what the book is about.
That is wonderful. That sounds wonderful. Now, for someone like myself, I know you have a website. Can we look at your book online? Is there an e-book available?
In fact, there is.
Okay.
If you go to brothermancomics.com, the trade paperbacks are available for sale. However, you'll see a link where it says read issues 3, 4, and 5, and we allow you to go and read those online for free so you can get an idea of the story. And that particular story is the one Guy was talking about earlier about Block and the Twin Terrors. Derek and Eric. So that's available online, where you can actually read that right online right now. And then if you like that, you can purchase the trade paperbacks, which is all the back issues. And we also, like I said, we're working on the graphic novel, which is coming soon next year. And we also, there's a link to our YouTube page on brothermancomics.com, where you can actually watch some of the interviews, because Arsenio Hall talked about our book.
That was my very next question. Go ahead. Talk about Arsenio.
Arsenio Hall was featured on America's Most Wanted. Most of the major U.S. city papers had done stories on us. We have like a deep history of media coverage. I mean, all the way to Japan with Brother Man. And the thing is, we did it independently, and we were still reaching the world. So,
now, what was it like the day that you got the call from Arsenio Hall, stating that, you know, they wanted to talk about Brother Man?
It was
what
like
were
a
you
dream.
Doing?
Yeah, it was like a dream. I mean, what happened was that was in the first year we came out. So we only had 2 books out at the time, and they found out about it from the San Francisco Chronicle, because we were in a lot of different newspapers around the country. So they called us up and said, Arsenio wants to talk about your book on the show. So we didn't know what he was going to do, how he was going to do it. We just sent some material. And, you know, you kind of wonder, is he really going to talk about this? And it was the last segment on his monologue when he opens up the show. So when he actually started talking about it, you know, I remember just being nervous. I mean, my legs are actually shaking, like, yo, he's really talking about it.
Right.
You know, and it was really impactful, you know. That was also a boost on the product sales, you know what I mean? And
yeah.
And actually, that is key to when I talk to people now about how hip-hop has been co-opted and a lot of corporations are making money off of what a lot of rappers and all them, they talk about. When they talk about products that are not black-owned and operated, they are validating and increasing the sales of these products. And I say, hey, I know that firsthand. Once Arsenio talked about our books, sales went off like crazy. Now imagine if a lot of our entertainers and performers talked about independent black business products and put them in their videos and really endorsed that, as opposed to all that material stuff that only benefits people outside of your community, what it can do for us. You know what I mean? So to me, that's one of the things that I talk about in terms of the impact that Arsenio made and how that connects to us financially, and how we can continue to rebuild if we learn to utilize and promote ourselves through these mediums.
Now, you mentioned earlier that a lot of young students were confronting you or asking questions asking for advice.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any forum on your website for these coming up cartoonists and artists to show their work or any type of guidance that you have where, you know, I know you get the same questions over and over again, I guess frequently asked questions. Is that going to be made available so when this person comes up to you and says, you know, how do you get into this and look at my work? Is there any place I could upload my work? And
well,
a little guidance as far as, because I know you said you went to college, your background is fine arts.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you can't spend 2 or 3 hours after every presentation to tell them exactly what to do. Is there
right.
a forum?
Well, the thing is, in 2003, I came out with an art instructional video called Drawing from the Soul.
Okay.
It was created for that reason, because the years that we were doing the book, like, I remember being in Chicago doing the Chicago Black Expo, and some woman came up to me and said, how much do you charge for art classes? Because my son really needs to draw. And I said, well, miss, I don't live in Chicago. You know, she said, well, how much would it cost for you to come up and teach him? And, you know, it just wasn't feasible. I couldn't do that. But I do understand that boy needs to have that type of training. So I said, you know what? We need to come out with an art instructional video. And I eventually finally put one together, and I put it out, got it in the school systems around the country. It went over really well. And I intend to bring back the series in DVD format. Not the exact same one, because we want to reshoot it. We want to make it sharper. I mean, even if people like the one that came out years ago, they're really going to be pleased with the new work that we're planning on doing. But everything's coming in stages. It's like, unless we're like, you know, that company that's financed where we can do everything all at once, you know, we can
right.
do drums, so we can make toys, we have to do everything a step at a time. Right now it's trade paperback, promote the show, we make enough from that, then we can put out the graphic novel.
So I'm very impressed with you. I think that you're doing an awesome job. I think it's commendable. Has anyone ever told you and your brother that you guys are the superheroes?
Yeah.
Am I still on?
Was Brother Man.
Am I on?
Yeah, you're on.
Okay, good.
Okay,
I thought I got cut off.
No, you did, but I put you right back.
Things like that. You know, it's just an honor to think that, you know, you take your thoughts and your creativity, and you put your soul into something, and then there's people that appreciate it, and they can draw from it. And it takes them in another direction. So do I think it's super? No, I think it's something that more people should do and not worry about the financial return. If a financial return is to come, it's going to come. But if you think about it, there's a lot of people in this world who have done things that have been impactful, and they don't get a dime from it. They get a human currency from it, and that's what they're looking for. But, you know, I always say, If people are chasing the money, you'll find it. But usually, if you're chasing the money, you'll do anything to get it, and then you always then it's not, you know, it's for them, not for me.
It's not rewarding. It's not fulfilling.
Right. You know.
Well, you know, I can't imagine how you could draw people, young men, away from the rap industry and all the negativity. There's so much competition, and for you to have these young men come to your presentations and say and share, you know, come prepared with their own work and look at the guidance.
I'm sorry, Leslie, but I think it's not that we're drawing them away. They're looking for an outlet. You know how people say, why do young men join gangs and things like that? It's because they're looking for something, and the gang gives them that outlet, you know, for a lot of folks. Same thing here. You have a lot of people who are talented, and either their families don't understand. How do you keep it going? And that's tough because, you know, if your children have musical talents, athletic talents, we tend to understand that, you know, because you can put them on a team. But, you know, if they like to write, which is very personal, if they like to draw, if they like to do things with ceramics, do music, you know, sometimes people don't understand, how do I foster that? And so when they see an outlet, yeah, they're going to gravitate to it, but a lot of times it takes the family to help to get them to those places. A family has to, you know, a little kid is not just going to walk up to the art museum. Some family member has to take them there, which means, you know, it has to be in the family's head that this is important even if I don't understand it.
So did you guys understand fine art at a young age?
Well, you know, I used to like to write. I didn't consider it fine art, but that was my that's how I expressed myself through writing, and like I said, it was very private, so I just did it. But I was also a storyteller, a jokester at times, and so it always gave me a way to do things. I watched Dawood draw from the moment he could pick up a pencil, you know, or a crayon. So he just did things his way, but our parents saw it, and they did the things by buying us the art supplies, buying us books, you know, getting us the books that we need to read that will help us. I always say you can't be a writer if you're not a reader. And my father introduced me to Black Boy by Richard Wright. I mean, that just opened up the world of writing to me, just reading that one book. I said, man, that's the man I want to be next. Yeah, I want to be the next Richard Wright. But now I'm more mature, I say, well, you know, I want to be the next Guy Sims, whoever that person is, but that's who I'm working towards now. But he brought that to me, and I'm quite sure he did certain things for Dawood.
And
my mother, too. Don't leave her out.
Okay. All right, Dawood, you said you went to a arts high, if I'm correct.
Well, I was an art major when I was in high school. That's when
was this
I was really
a special good. School? Did you have to apply, or was this your regional school, and it had these courses that allowed you to?
Philadelphia Public School System.
Okay.
But my high school art teacher, he was well known for raising up a lot of great artists, and you know, they were winning a lot of awards, which is one reason why I wanted to go to Central High School of Philadelphia. And when I was there, we did a lot of you know, studies like anatomy drawings, gesture drawings, which is, you know, just learning how to capture movement, be able to see somebody in 1 minute, remember how the movement of how they feel. And we did that a lot, you know. So I studied art. It wasn't like my training was comic books. My training was fine art. And I just liked comics. And the graffiti and all that stuff was a part of the city's culture. So, you know, I was into the style of it, but I wasn't into the vandalism because my dad wasn't having that. So I always wanted to infuse it. Like, okay, well, I see the art in it, and I have respect from the streets, from airbrushing, from a lot of the graffiti writers because I had a hand for it. But I was always recognized, even throughout Philly, as the guy that took the style off the wall, and Brother Man was the first book that actually incorporated graffiti and all that stuff, but it was the backdrop to the world of Brother Man. It wasn't the glorification of vandalism. What it was, the book represented positivity and rebuilding out of decay. When things are falling, it's an old city. New York, Philly, they're old cities, so that is the backdrop, but it doesn't mean everything there is negative. There's a lot of great things, family, children, love, that's going on, and that's what Brother Man is about, is raising that awareness and finding the greatness within ourselves. However, I brought that culture in, which brings those who love hip-hop and graffiti to the book. But when they read the book, they feel a connection. It's like, wow, this reminds me of my family. Wow, this is touching, man. This is for real, man. Wow, I could be Brother Man. It's like, yo, you can be. They can't be Spider-Man because you can't jump out the window. You know, you'll die. But Brother Man, you can be him. When you tap into the spiritual self, that's when you become Brother Man, because then people look at you as that positive component to the community.
Okay. Now, we know Arsenio Hall was one of the people that followed your book and your work. Any other celebrities mention your book and, you know, promoted it for you?
Yeah. I actually sat down with Lauryn Hill. She was a fan. She even told me she read my books all through high school. She really loved
it. She's from New Jersey, too, right?
Right. South Orange. No, yeah, South Orange, New Jersey. And I sat down with her, and she told me about her interest in the book. Samuel Jackson, he showed up to a producer that I was dealing with at the time, and he had all 11 of his books and told him it was his favorite comic book. I know Kadeem Hardison wore a Brother Man shirt on a show a long time ago. He acknowledged it. Speech from Arrested Development had sent a letter that's published in one of our books.
Wesley Snipes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Guy?
Wesley Snipes.
Oh, yeah, Wesley Snipes. You know, I sat down with him recently. And you know, and even when we did the Black Expos back in the day, I remember Sinbad bought his book from us directly, Ice-T. I mean, there's a whole lot of people. Even Kool Herc, who started hip-hop, who started DJing, he bought his books from us directly, along with Crazy Legs from the Zulu Nation. I mean, our books are respected and revered by a lot of people in the industry, and they respect the books because I think Brother Man respects the community.
Right.
Oh, and it's honest. It's honesty to it.
Now,
so
how can we get, for people like myself who are so far away from you, how can we get a signed autographed copy of Brother Man or even a T-shirt to go along with it?
They go to brothermancomics.com, and when you order your book, you can put in a comment, please can artist please autograph. But I would only be – I can only sign because it would be shipping from Atlanta where I am. My brother Guy is in Virginia, so he wouldn't have access to the book to sign.
Okay.
So he would probably be a little bit more difficult to get unless he's in a city near you.
Okay. All right. Well, it's been a wonderful show. I'm so proud to be a person able to interview you. I told you I was upset I wasn't the first Blog Talk Radio host, but I'm glad that I was able to interview you too, the two of you. You're doing a wonderful job, and I hope to interview you again next month to promote your book as a perfect Christmas present. I think.
All right, Russ.
So we'll get you on again around Black Friday, Thanksgiving. Day after Thanksgiving, I want to have a special show with people like yourself. So, again, thank you for doing all that you do. Good luck with your promotional lectures and presentations, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Thank you, Leslie. And Black Friday, that's appropriate.
And that's it. Right. No pun intended. Have a good night, fellas.
Okay, thank you, Leslie.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.